From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. With Florida's primary election now less than 2 weeks away, we hear from candidates vying to represent the state's 19th congressional district. That district extends from Fort Myers to Marco Island. Former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino and Sanibel Councilman Chauncey Goss join us in studio for a discussion on their qualifications, priorities, and positions. Naples businessman Francis Rooney is also in the race. And last week, Charlotte County resident Mary Knowlton was fatally shot by a Punta Gorda police officer during a shoot, don't shoot roleplay exercise. While the case remains under investigation, we explore what went wrong through a closer look at the ins and outs of firearm training and gun safety. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. A community is in mourning following the August 9th death of 73-year-old retired librarian Mary Knowlton of Punta Gorda. Knowlton was fatally shot by a Punta Gorda police officer during a use of lethal force role-playing exercise during a program similar to the department's Citizen Police Academy. Punta Gorda Police Chief Tom Lewis says his department was unaware it even had ammunition for the revolver used in the role-play scenario. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement is investigating, and the incident has raised serious questions among firearm safety experts. Later this hour, we explore what may have gone wrong, and we take a closer look at firearm training and what every gun owner should know about gun safety. But first, Florida's August 30th primary election is fast approaching. Voters will select a new representative to fill Florida's Congressional District 19 seat. The district extends from Fort Myers to Marco Island. With Florida's closed primary system and no Democrat running in the race, Southwest Florida voters registered Republican will decide the race in the upcoming election. GOP Congressman Kirk Clawson, who currently holds the seat, announced earlier this year he would not seek a second term. Today we're joined in studio by Congressional District 19 candidate Dan Bongino. Bongino joined the U.S. Secret Service in 1999 and in 2006 joined the Presidential Protective Division under President George W. Bush and remained into the Obama administration. He's author of the New York Times bestseller Life Inside the Bubble, Why a Top-Ranked Secret Service Agent Walked Away from It All, and this year released The Fight, a Secret Service agent's inside account of security failings in the political machine. He's also a small business owner and hosts a podcast called The Renegade Republican with Dan Bongino that's available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Dan Bongino, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by a fellow Republican Congressional District 19 candidate, Chauncey Goss. Goss is a longtime Sanibel Island resident and owner of the budget forecasting firm Goss Practical Solutions. He also serves on boards for the Southwest Florida Community Foundation, the United Way of Lee, Hendry, Glades, and Okeechobee, the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation, and the Lee Coast Military Officers Association of America Foundation, among others. During his time in Washington, D.C., Goss worked as a national security defense analyst in the Executive Office of the President and the Office of Management and Budget, and served as deputy staff director for the Committee on the Budget for the U.S. House. Goss also worked on putting together the defense budget for President George W. Bush. That was after the September 11th attacks. Chauncey Goss, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
We also invited Republican candidate, Naples businessman, and former U.S. ambassador to the Holy See, Francis Rooney, to be with us today, but he declined to participate. But I do invite listeners to join the conversation. Connect with our guests with your comments and questions by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Write to us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And to start off, I just wanted to give each of you an opportunity to give a brief opening statement regarding your qualifications and why you're running for this congressional seat. And just going in alphabetical order, we'll start with you, Mr.
Yeah, I always win with alphabetical order. So it's good having a B in front of your name, right? Again, my name is Dan Bongino. I was a Secret Service agent, spent 12 years there. I think this position is about leadership and judgment, and that's one of the things in the Secret Service that gets imparted on you quickly. You know, they don't tolerate fools in the Secret Service. When you screw things up, people get hurt or, God forbid, die. And I got on at a very early age, in my early 20s. It's a very flat organization. There's not a lot of supervisors. Matter of fact, I was always surprised that you know, when you got in and they said, hey, listen, you're a young 20-year-old guy. We taught you in training how to do this. Now go out and do this advance for Hillary Clinton, who was running for Senate at the time. And I thought to myself, wow, this is real. Like, this is the time to get this done. It required the development of leadership and judgment, which I think are critical. This is a conservative district. I am a conservative. And that's why I decided to jump in this race and try to represent the district and Southwest Floridians.
Very, very good. And Chauncey Goss.
Yeah, John, I grew up here in Southwest Florida, and my folks moved here in 1970. I had the opportunity, since I did grow up here, my wife and I, Allison, we're now raising our kids here. I've got a business here. This is a great place to live. As you mentioned, I'm very involved in the community. I've got a very good understanding of Southwest Florida, and we need someone in Congress who has that understanding. I also have an understanding of the way that Congress works. I've worked on the Hill and some jobs that are actually very difficult, not glamour jobs. I was sort of the chief numbers cruncher for Paul Ryan when he was working on something called the Roadmap for America's Future, which was a conservative Republican view of how to fix entitlement spending, how to fix the tax code, how to sort of make this country better from a financial standpoint. So what I can do is I can bring those two things together, and I can bring a little bit of Southwest Florida, and then I have that understanding of working at the federal level on the government, on the deficits.
And Don Bongino, excuse me, I was hoping you could maybe tell us a bit more just about your background in law enforcement, because, you know, even before the Secret Service, you were in law enforcement. And perhaps, you know, I can't help but get the impression that had a lot to do in shaping your political ideology and really inspiring you to run for public office.
Yeah, it's Dan, by the way. Dan Bongino.
I'm sorry.
Everybody
I'm
does
sorry.
That. Don't worry. You know what it is? It's the Bond and Bongino. It screws everybody up. So don't worry about it. Even my friends do it sometimes. Yeah, it did. You know, when I was a young man, I was always fascinated by economics, but not politics and political ideology in particular. But then when you were a young police officer, you correctly indicated, when I was an NYPD cop, I was, gosh, am I 20, 21 years old, and they put you out in the streets and you see the ramifications of policies in the real world and you talk to actual people living it every day, you start to see a lot of the failures of one mode of thinking. And the common thread to that failure, and which I think, again, you accurately stated did shape my political ideology, was this failure of a big government model to solve the big problems. You know, sometimes it can do the little things locally, but the big problems definitely weren't fixed, not where I was. So it did shape my political ideology. That's an accurate statement.
All right, right. And Chauncey Goss, tell us a bit about your budget forecasting firm and what services you provide here, and then we'll get a little bit more into your time in D.C.
Yeah, basically, what I did was I took what I learned in D.C. and I brought it here. I just figured out a way to monetize it a little bit so I could put some food on the table for my wife and kids. And so what I do is I help people understand what the federal government's spending money on and how the process works. The budget is very much a process-oriented vehicle, so you have to understand what's going to happen, and I help people understand that so they can take a look at it. And it's generally people who do business with the government, so they can see that, you know, whether there's going to be a shutdown or not this year, whether there's going to be a continuing resolution. It's process-oriented things to help those businesses plan for their futures.
All right. And when it comes to your time in D.C., particularly with the national security, defense analysis mm-hmm. work you were doing, how do those experiences position you to serve in Congress, particularly when it comes to issues of national security and terrorism concerns?
Well, I have a good knowledge of the way the Department of Defense works. I got to do some wargaming when I was up there in the strategic planning world, and that really helped. And then when I was doing resourcing the Department of Defense with the president after 9/11, that gave me a good understanding of sort of what DOD needs, what DOD doesn't need. And DOD is, you know, it's an enormous organization. And yeah, there's some waste there. There's no doubt. Any organization that big has waste. But what it is, when you look at the Constitution, it's the reason for the federal government is we need to make sure we protect people. And that you know, right now, the world is not a safe place. I talked to my dad about this. As you know, dad was head of the CIA. Yep. And he tells me, you know, 15 years later, after 9/11, he doesn't think we're any safer. And that to me is something that really – it's very discouraging because I look at the amount of money we've spent and I look at the amount of lives that have been lost. And that's problematic. So I can bring that sort of national security background, to representing Southwest Florida.
All right. And Dan Bongino, of course, a top priority of yours on the campaign trail has been national security,
sure.
Dealing with terrorism threats, protecting soft targets here at home. Can you tell us more about, you know, what you'd like to do, what you'd like to advocate for in Congress, and perhaps how your experiences, you know, being a Secret Service agent, you know, with the active president of the United States, sometimes in war zones,
yeah.
might have shaped that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things here. I think from an umbrella view, one of the things I noticed being a federal agent, especially working joint terror cases, is if the general public and your listeners only understood the segmentation and the siloing that goes on at the federal level, they would be horrified. Listen, this isn't a partisan issue. Democrat, libertarian, green, Republican, whatever you may be, everyone cares about their kids. If you knew how dangerous a condition was being created by the fact that we have an alphabet soup of federal agencies that can't communicate, don't communicate, redact information from each other, and you have these jurisdictional fiefdoms where the special agent in charge of this office doesn't talk to the special agent in charge of the DEA because he's protecting his own job, again, you would be horrified. So I would say from an umbrella issue, one of the things I noticed and we should fix right away is we have to look at a really big problem-solving approach where we say, do we really need this? Can't we just have a counterterror agency, a law enforcement agency at the federal level, and maybe a really robust, strong internal affairs IG-type operation? If we don't do that, then none of the smaller problems are going to get fixed. We have to look at big, bold approaches right now.
All right. And I kind of wanted to stay on the topic of national security, and perhaps part of that is border security. And a question I wanted to pose to both of you, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has famously advocated for building a border wall between the U.S. and Mexico. And Chauncey Goss, beginning with you, is that something that you would support?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to build a wall. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. We also need to do some other things. We need an e-verify system so that we can track who's in this country so that we know – an employer knows whether someone's here legally or not. We need to put the onus on the employer a little bit to say, this person's here legally or this person's not. We also need to take a look at visas to make sure we track people. Right now, I mentioned last night, and I believe very strongly in this, that FedEx, UPS can track packages really well. They know where they are all the time. We have no idea where people are once they come to this country, and that's unacceptable. We're the United States of America. We're pretty technologically sound. We could figure this out if we put our minds to it.
And a response? Is that something that you would support as well, the border wall?
Yeah, I think Chauncey and I agree on this. Listen, walls are built around homes, not to keep people out. You have people in your home, right? Everybody does. I use this analogy because when the politics gets involved, people tend to lose reason and think with emotion on the issue. Listen, my wife's an immigrant. I'm not going to be lectured on immigration from anyone. My great-grandparents were immigrants. My wife and I went through the legal process. So unlike most who talk about it, in some political speech, I lived it. But we build walls around our home to create a door and to create windows to let air in and a door to let people in. The process of having a door and a wall is to create order. You don't want people coming into your house. You don't live in your grass in the backyard because there's a security issue. You want those walls to protect you and let people in an orderly fashion. The only thing controversial about a wall are the leftists who want to believe in this open borders policy, which in today's sad, tragic era of soft target terrorism is completely unreasonable to ask the American citizen to subject themselves to. We need a wall to let people in an orderly, organized fashion. It's a very simple process once we politically commit to it.
Well, and I wanted to also ask you to respond to maybe some of the critics of Donald Trump's plan to build the wall. One of the things we've heard is that his cost estimates are much lower than what the actual cost would be. How tenable is it that Mexico would actually pay for it? And with the Rio Grande River being the divider, you can't actually put a wall on the river. So building this might even involve the use of eminent domain to take private land.
Well, I think a wall is maybe a little metaphorical, but I look at a wall, whether it's a physical wall or whether it's an electronic wall. We have drones. I mean, we've got technologies where we can track what's going on the border, and we need to do that. And whether the United States should pay for it, I think absolutely we should, because this is a national security issue. And if we can't secure our borders, and if the federal government can't do that, we cannot keep our population safe. So I think it's a priority. And I know what we spend money on in this country. I worked the budget very closely. I know exactly what we spend money on. And this, the wall is not a priority. It needs to be.
Yeah, I think, Chauncey's a numbers guy. I haven't seen the budget in intricate detail. Don't you, Chauncey, find it interesting that the liberals are only concerned about these items when it comes to a conservative party? Like nobody cares about cost overruns on Obamacare, on food stamps, on Medicaid, on entitlements, on SCHIP. Like none of those cost overruns matter. But all of a sudden we want to build a security wall. And next thing you know, the far left says, oh, my gosh, the cost is going to be more. Listen, that's a little hypocritical. I mean, by the people – I'm not suggesting, of course, you're saying that. But you are right, though, about the wall. There are certain areas where it's just not feasible. I mean, you can't build a wall across the river, but there are technologies to mitigate that, certain sections in the wall. I mean, there's sensor technology. We had it at the White House. It's very sophisticated these days. And, you know, Chauncey's right. There is drone and camera technology we could use in certain areas. But building it, yeah, you know, I let's have an honest conversation with the left. They're only concerned about cost when it's not one of their priorities.
Well, Dan Bongino, you've given me a great kind of segue here, bringing up Obamacare. let's go ahead and bring that up. I imagine both of you would support repealing the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, absolutely. Obamacare is – I fought it very hard when I was working in the House Budget Committee. It came through our committee because it was a reconciliation bill, and I was working with Mr. Ryan at the time. And it's just not a good idea. It's not something that I believe in that's going to work. I don't think the United States should go to a single payer health plan. It's not affordable. I look at the numbers, and right now the numbers are skyrocketing for health care. I look at it also as a job killer. I have a small business, a very small business, but I've watched my premiums double. I've watched my coverage been cut in half. I see Aetna's moving out of the United out of Florida. I see United Healthcare.
10 other states as well.
Yeah, and United Healthcare just pulled out a couple months ago. So all of a sudden, if all of the healthcare companies aren't making any money, which makes me scratch my head because I keep writing these premiums that are going up. I don't know how they're not making money because my family's pretty healthy and I'm writing huge premiums. And if that's happening across the board, they ought to be making money. So if they're not, there's something wrong with the whole process. And that was what we had predicted would happen. And it's unfortunately proving itself to be true. So I'd like to see us go to a much more market-based system. I'd like to see some transparency in healthcare. Right now, healthcare, it's not a market system that's functioning properly. And it could be, but it's not, and it's not going to be under Obamacare.
Yeah, and Dan Bongino, I imagine there's a lot of consubstantiation between your positions on this.
Yeah. I mean, Obamacare has been a disaster from the start. You know, not – folks, don't take my word for it. Just take the president's own words. I mean, you can go to YouTube and look at his speeches. They're not a mystery. The president said we'll save your family $2,500 in health care costs per year. Folks, that hasn't happened. It is categorically false for him to have said that. He knew it was nonsense and he said it anyway. So if you believe the president, then the president has been a failure on that metric. Secondly, his famous, you know, PolitiFact lie of the year or Washington Post, you know, 52 Pinocchios or whatever it was. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan, which he emphasized by saying, period. Folks, that was a lie. It was not true. It was factually incorrect. My plan was canceled not once but twice. So were millions of other Americans. So again, if President Obama's own words were a marker for success, then it doesn't matter what Dan Bongino's opinion is. Of course I want to repeat. By his own words, the program's an abysmal failure, and it can't work because it won't work. The economics of it are simply broken, which is a whole other show we could do. I love healthcare economics. It's my personal fascination.
All right. We're speaking with Republican candidates for Florida's Congressional District 19 seat, who will face off in the August 30th primary election. We're joined in studio by Chauncey Goss and Dan Bongino. Francis Rooney is also in the race but declined to be with us today. Listeners can join the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And just wanted to go back to immigration for just a quick moment here. Candidate Trump has called for a temporary ban on Muslim immigration into the U.S. And I'm interested in what your positions on that would be.
I don't think we need to ban all Muslims from coming into the country right now, but we certainly ought to be taking a look at their country of origin and where they're coming from. And that's an issue right now. And we also need to be taking a look at some of our friends like Great Britain. It's very easy to get into Great Britain from a country that wants to do us harm and then come over here on a Great Britain passport. So I think we need to make sure we have some sort of holding area or an asylum basically set up so that we can properly vet people. We can't just take people at their word that they're not going to do us harm. And I think we need to take a look. If someone's pledged to Sharia law, that's not necessarily compatible with U.S. law. And if they're pledged to do us harm, then we're stupid to let them into this country. And we need to be smart about this.
Yeah, I don't believe in religious tests for office or for admittance to the United States. I believe in liberty, and liberty has a price, and the price for liberty is going to be, you know, we're not going to have absolute security all the time. But I will say this. We should not, absolutely should not be admitting people from countries where we can't 100% ensure that at least the vetting process works. I don't think there's anything unreasonable about that. When the FBI director, who I think everyone can agree is a nonpartisan actor, he's taken shots from both sides. When the FBI director goes up on Capitol Hill and says, hey, folks, we're querying these refugees against databases that don't exist in Syria. They're not going to the Syrian DMV. Then I you know, as a former federal agent, I'm taking the man's word for it. And I'm sorry, we can't admit people until we have an answer that they're safe first. That has to be a priority.
All right. Let's go to another important policy position, I believe, for both of you, and that's the issue of tax reform. Chauncey Goss, I understand you're a supporter of House Speaker Ryan's latest tax reform proposal.
Yeah, I'm a supporter of any tax reform proposal, honestly, because right now the tax code is so messed up, and every single person in this country knows that. Every one of your listeners knows that. Nobody likes the tax code, and I used to think you could fix it incrementally. I don't think so anymore. I think it needs to be scrapped, and we need to start again. And whether that's a fair tax, whether it's a flat tax, I don't really care. I think Speaker Ryan's plan is a step in the right direction. Again, I don't think it's sufficient because I think we can go further. And you know, he certainly broadens the base and lowers the rates, which is what I want to see, and I'd love to see us get rid of all the loopholes and just make it really simple. We had something called the Taxpayer Choice Act back in, I think it was 2008 or 9. You could do your taxes on a index card, 4x6 index card, send that in, put some accountants out of business, but that's okay. They'd find something else to do. I'm sure they would. They're smart people. So I think that we can – I would love to see something like that, and we could go there if we could get the lobbyists out of it.
Yeah, taxes Listen, this is a big topic. I mean, we have capital gains taxes, we have corporate taxes, we have personal income taxes, and I'd like to see reform on all fronts. I mean, just to kind of sum it up, because we're short on time in each topic. The capital gains tax is a tax on investment. It's destroying U.S. jobs. Why, when you tax something, you get less of it? That's obvious. The corporate tax is the highest in the industrialized world at 35%. The effective rate is 18 to 20%. So you may be asking yourself, if you're listening, well, why charge the highest rate? If when you factor in the deductions, people are paying a lesser rate anyway, just charge a flat lesser rate. Well, you know, of course, knuckleheads in D.C. can't figure that out. I'd like to see a flat corporate tax. And finally, on the personal tax front, I'd like to see a flat tax, 15 to 20%. We have enough revenue with the payroll tax to balance the budget. And also we can get rid of all the compliance costs. I love accountants, but do we really need to be spending, you know, billions each year to comply? I don't think so.
All right. Well, let's take a look at a particularly cogent issue here in Southwest Florida, and that is, of course, regarding our water woes and environmental concerns. And I just wanted to start off by asking if either of you support incoming State Senate President Joe Negron's plan to spend $2.4 billion to buy agriculture land south of Lake Okeechobee, you know, for water storage and to help reduce these harmful discharges of nutrient-laden water into the Caloosahatchee River and to the St. Lucie River to the east.
Yeah, John, I absolutely do. I'm a Sanibel City Councilman, and that's every month on our agenda. That's, you know, we spend 15, 20, 30 minutes talking about water quality because it's really important to us because it's our economy. We're very tourism-based on Sanibel, and one thing I've noticed as we've been walking around the district talking to people in Cape Coral and Fort Myers, it's not just a tourism issue. It's an issue that's hitting us all. And so when I read what fixes do we have out there, the University of Florida is pretty specific about this, that we need to buy land south. And so Senator Negron wants to buy land south. I am all in favor of that. I wish the governor would follow that lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of our campaigns have been door knocking, and you know, Chauncey's right. I've been getting the same response, and this is kind of an issue, the environmental issue. It always bothers me that we tend to make this a partisan issue when it's not. I mean, I'm out there. I've knocked on about 2,500 doors, and whenever you ask, it doesn't matter, Republican 4, which is in our system a diehard Republican, or even if you run into a Democrat casually knocking on doors and you see someone who wants to chat. When you ask them what matters most to you, they say the water. It's not a partisan issue. Now, regarding Senator Negron's plan, I like it. Some of the details I think we can work out. I know Senator Rubio had some issues with it because there's some federal projects as well. And what we don't want to do is we don't want to layer more projects on top of existing projects. But one thing about the plan he's right on, and I think Chauncey and I agree, is we have to get the land. I don't support eminent domain, but we got to get the players to the table and get the land.
All right. Let's take a call from Brian in Naples. Brian, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, good, good. Did you have a question or comment for our candidates?
Yeah, I'm just a first-time caller, and I'm actually a first-time voter, so this is kind of important for me. I think that with our environment, whether you believe in global warming or not, I think our waterways are private. Because I have family who are fishermen and who make a living off of the land. And we need somebody strong in Congress to back this up. Do we have any plans for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we both just answered that. We need to get the land. The water has to go south.
Yeah, Brian, the reason I'm running for Congress really has to do with water quality. We need someone who's in Congress who's going to work on this, you know, full time for us, not take their eye off the ball. We've had five congressmen in the last 12 years, and that churn has not helped us. It's not helped us at all sort of get to the front of the line when we need to for making sure we're getting our water problems taken care of.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Brian. Appreciate it. And let's take another call right now. This is from Rick in Fort Myers. Rick, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good, good. Did you have a question for our candidates?
I have two questions and comments. If one of the reasons Mr. Bongino wants to build a wall is to protect us from a terrorist coming in, shouldn't we also build one across the Canadian border? And secondly, they say there's over 10 million people currently protected by Obamacare. I wish somebody would come in and say, we're going to replace it and then repeal it, rather than the other way around, so there's something those people can depend on in the meantime.
All right. Well, on your first question, the answer is yes. We have had terrorists who have figured out rather quickly that entering through the northern border may be a more efficient way of doing it. Ironically, they're having a tough time getting into Canada, some of them, because of their entry-exit procedures. So, yes, you're right. We have to control who comes in and out of the country. And on Obamacare, you know, listen, 10 million people haven't gotten insurance due to Obamacare. That's a myth. What Obamacare did is it expanded Medicaid. That's basically me paying for someone else's health care again, who makes up to 140% of the federal poverty level. So to say that people got Obamacare as if it was some kind of pie-in-the-sky gift to people is simply inaccurate. It was just the government taking a pot of money from one group of people, and giving it to another group of people, who one group is richer and one group is now poorer. It's very zero-sum. So that's just not an accurate statement on the using the healthcare economics as a guidepost.
Medicaid.
Yeah, which you pay for. It's not, again, this isn't private insurance. It was not an expansion of private insurance. It was just another government handout.
I understand that. So we're taking it out of one pocket and putting it in another. It doesn't matter. Somebody's got to come up with a better plan.
No, it matters to the guy whose pocket's lighter.
Any Republican come up with a better plan.
Really? Well, then you haven't looked. I mean, tell me a Republican. I can tell you right now, Republicans who've had another plan. Can you tell me? All right,
no,
so you haven't done your homework. I have. Tom Cole had a plan. Paul Ryan had a plan. That's not my fault. You have to do your homework. There are Republican plans. If you don't know what they are, that's not my issue. That's yours.
Well,
you're an American citizen, too.
They're privatization and their medical savings. Well, most people don't have enough money to pay their rent, let alone to put money for medical savings.
That's simply inaccurate. They're not privatization. It's personalization, and it involved a number of government subsidies to people who couldn't afford it. Again, sir, it's not. If you don't do your homework, I can't do it for you. There are Republican plans. You may not like them. That's fine. That's your right. But saying that there are no Republican plans is simply inaccurate.
All right.
Then somebody ought to start saying we're going to replace it and then repeal it, because it doesn't sound good.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on now, but thanks for the call, Rick. I did just want to push back on one other thing that I think Rick may have alluded to, and the idea being that when folks who previously had not had access to care were able to get it through the Affordable Care Act, then they were able to go to doctors and not end up in the emergency room, which, because of EMTALA laws passed in the 80s, emergency rooms see people regardless of their ability to pay. And a lot of proponents of the ACA would point out that that is a lot of what has driven up the cost of health care.
Yeah, but the Oregon study that they did on emergency room usage showed the exact opposite. That's not what it showed. Again, we have to deal with reason, not, you know, whether we love Obamacare or not. Oregon did a study on the expansion of Medicaid, and supposedly the theory was that emergency room usage would go down and cost would go down correspondingly. That's exactly what didn't happen. Emergency room usage went up. So again, are we dealing with facts, or are we dealing with, you know, opinions based on how we emotionally feel about Obamacare? So, you know, yeah, I appreciate your input on that, but that's not accurate. That's not exactly what happened, which is nothing happened that was supposed to happen in Obamacare. That's the problem.
All right. All right. I'd like to go back to the environmental issue for a little while, if we could here. Chauncey Goss, I'd heard that you'd recently suggested in the past that perhaps there's a way that this issue could be addressed, or these issues, I should say, could be addressed at the state level without necessarily involving the federal government. And I was hoping maybe you could expand upon that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I have not said that. I think actually Dan, that may be more of Dan's position, but I don't think we're very far apart on this. But I think what you're probably referring to is the fact that I said I'm not sure that the federal government needs to be that involved. The state of Florida is one of the biggest economies in the world. There's no reason the Army Corps of Engineers has to do our projects for us. I certainly think the federal government made the problem. The federal government needs to help fund fixing it. Whether the Corps of Engineers is the entity that does that, I don't know that they need to be. I think the Army Corps was a good idea at the time. I think that time may have passed. And what I have seen is the Army Corps just drives the cost of everything up. You know, Florida is perfectly capable of dredging its ports. You don't have to use the Army Corps to do that. It makes everything cost more expensive. You've got things like Davis-Bacon that drive up the cost for labor. It just doesn't make any sense to me why Florida couldn't say, hey, you guys, thanks very much. We're a big state. We're a big economy. You know, we'll figure this out and we'll do it ourselves. We don't need a middleman. And that's basically what the federal government is a big middleman.
All right. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, that was my position. I'd like to see the federal government slowly remove itself from this process. Now, there is money owed to Florida through the SERP projects that I'd like to see followed through on. I mean, this is federal money that was given the federal government by Floridians. We're the third largest state in the country. I'd like to see them follow through and give us our own money back. But after that, I'd like to see a really significantly reduced footprint by the federal government in these projects. I mean, let's be honest. Why do we have this problem now in the lake? Because the federal government decided to build a big toilet bowl in the middle of Florida. I mean, it was their idea, the Hoover Dyke. They're the ones who did this. So I'd like to see the state and locals control their own ecological future here with the lake.
All right. All right. And just as we kind of come towards the end here, I kind of wanted to tackle the issue of term limits, because I'm just thinking about this seat in particular. I mean, you know, going back to Ted Deutsch, Trey Radel, now Kurt Clausen, and then whoever wins this election, we continue to see freshman congressmen representing our district. And I'm wondering if you think that can create challenges in terms of helping get the support for Southwest Florida constituents on issues where, you know, it would be appropriate for the federal government to get involved.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that it creates issues. A freshman congressman, you know, you're one of 435, and then you're not one of 435. You're at the back of the 435. And, as a freshman, it's hard to get things done. I think Dan will point out accurately that you can get things done. You can be a loud voice. But you're not going to get on committees that, you know, probably make a whole lot of difference for your jurisdiction for a while, because those committees – are a little bit harder to get on. We've had a ton of turnover here. And I think that, you know, term limits are something that I believe in. I believe that, you know, 8 years, 10 years, fine, you know, whichever, it doesn't matter, as long as they apply to everybody. If we're the only people term limited, then we've tied our hands behind our back. And that, to me, is not an intelligent thing to do. And if you only term limit the House and you don't term limit the Senate, you've just made the Senate very powerful. And you've made the House – you've weakened the House. So I don't believe in that. But if there are federal term limits, there are for the president, there may as well be for the Congress, and I'm fine with that.
Dan Bongino, your position?
Yeah, I've term limited myself. And I don't think there's a lot of daylight in our positions here, Chauncey. Now, he is right. I mean, we do have to do it in a broad-based fashion, or else what you have is you have people like myself who commit to it to 4 terms, 8 years in Congress, and then you have everybody else in every other state, yep, which then takes over these committee assignments and takes Floridian money and spends it in whatever, Texas or Wyoming, whatever it may be. But I am doing it as an example. I hope more people take the lead on who are elected to Congress. I think as more people term limit themselves, we can build momentum towards getting some of these guys out of there. Listen, if you can't get it done in 8 years, you're not getting it done. I mean, that's just the hard reality of it.
All right. Well, that is all about all the time we have for this portion of the program. But thank you so much for being with me today. We've been speaking with Florida Congressional District 19 candidates Dan Bongino and Chauncey Goss. Naples businessman Republican Francis Rooney is also in the race, which will be decided in the August 30th primary election, now less than 2 weeks away. Again, great to speak with both of you, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, John.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, we'll take a closer look at last week's tragic shooting death of Mary Knowlton by a Punta Gorda police officer during a use of lethal force role-playing exercise as part of a program similar to the department's Citizen Police Academy. What went wrong? How can such tragedies be prevented in the future? And what sorts of safety precautions should every gun owner be following? That conversation's just ahead. Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.